Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast. My name is Keith McDonald and today I'm joined by Ian Doyle and Theo Squires to talk all things Liverpool, Mohamed Salah and a bit of Jordan Henderson. First, Ian, how's things?
It's not bad actually. We're outside, as you can probably tell, anybody who's watching on the old YouTube. And the weather's quite nice, although it did rain sand this morning on my way in, so there is that.
I'm still confused by the meaning of rain sand, but I'll let that kind of fly over my head. Theo, oh no, is only going to bring us back on.
Raining sand means that it was raining, and the sand has been brought up from, I think it's the Sahara, and then it deposits itself on my car, and therefore makes my car dirty, which is even more dirty than it normally is, and that is quite an achievement. Anyway.
Every day is a school day. Theo, raining sand where you're from this morning, or...?
No, I don't think so. I was going to say it was pleasant, but we were promised a sunny day today, weren't we? We were told to get a factor, was it 50, 30, whatever on, by cameraman Mark. And it's very grey here in Liverpool, as Doyle said. There was a little bit of rain coming in, so I feel like I've been misled. But here we are, sat outside, doing another episode of the Blood Red Podcast. So hopefully it doesn't rain during these, 30, 40 minutes that we're about to put together all to... I've lost my words there completely.
Well,
this is how well this is going, isn't it?
Yeah, but... We'll get straight into it then. There's plenty to talk about. Obviously, Liverpool have had the first four games of the season, but today is, at the time of recording, is the final day of the Saudi Pro League transfer window. Ian, there's been a lot of talk over the last 2-3 weeks about certain Mohamed Salah and El Etihad. There's a verbal bid rejected of $150 million last week by Liverpool. Just want to bring us up to date on the situation, perhaps, you know, the current standing of Liverpool and, you know, going to these final hours of the transfer window, what would that look like? From the Saudi point of view?
Well, from Liverpool's point of view, nothing's changed from the past 4 weeks, which is he's not for sale, and they all split up, went off on international duty on Sunday, and everybody just went, well, he's not for sale, that's the end of it. So, as you can probably tell, it's gone a little bit quiet over the last 2 days from Saudi Arabia. Beep to you as well, by the way. Just a bus going past. It's the 10 to St. Helens. It's a bus that goes everywhere, believe me. Anyway, going back to Salah, yeah, basically, Liverpool have always said that he's not for sale, and there's been no kind of change on that. And no matter how much money the Saudis are willing to bid, I mean, it started, didn't it, with rumours of $60 million, in which everybody laughed it off. Then it was $100 million, which was like, Then it was $150 million, I think the bid was, that got rejected, And that was only on Friday. But that was like, Thursday night, sorry. So it's about 24 hours before the deadline for Liverpool to buy any replacements. So Liverpool just went, no, that's just stupid. You know, we're not going to sell him now. And I think it's kind of... I think they kind of know now, don't they? Al Hilal are the ones that want to sign him. And
Al
Etihad. Sorry. Al
Hilal will be next year.
Yeah, Al Hilal's next year. Sorry, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself there. Al Etihad is the one that wants to sign him. And the point I was going to make then, that I've rushed to, is that there is some suggestion that this was their window to sign him and he could next summer if Salah does actually end up going to Saudi Arabia, which I think a lot of people are taking that as a bit of a given, but I'm not entirely massively 100% on that.
Yeah.
Purely on the basis that we don't know what it's going to be like in a year's time to see what state the league's in. I mean, the league's not going to disappear. It's been there for like, not so much called the Saudi Pro League, but I mentioned on a podcast previously that football, there's a massive football history and heritage in Saudi Arabia. So their teams, and I think Al Ittihad, they're nearly 100 years old or something like that, the actual club itself. Yeah,
the
So they've been there around for a long time. So there's no suggestion that anything's going to happen to any of these clubs. But what could happen is that maybe the money gets pulled if it doesn't, like, you know, take off as much as they were, or certainly not as much money spent.
Yeah.
But again, that's just hypothesizing. But again, that comes down to the point that everyone's just been kind of assuming that Salah's going to go, whether it's this year or next year. It's certainly not going to be this year now. It won't be in January because there's the Africa Cup of Nations. Seems no point in going then. Liverpool definitely won't want to sell him mid-season. That takes you then to next summer. And who knows what state the league's going to be in and which team that will be assigned, you know, Mohamed Salah. So in that respect, I know it's what we said, but just gone 10 o'clock in the morning on Thursday. There's just going to be nothing happening. And I think that it's gone a little bit quiet over in Saudi Arabia. Suggests they've accepted that. But it may just be, you know, laying the foundations for a move next year. And that's kind of been my thought from the start. They've been putting in the effort to show that they actually want to sign him and want him, whether it's Al Ittihad, Al Hilal, whoever. You know, that Saudi want him as the, you know, the figurehead, because he's obviously, you know, the most famous Arab footballer in the world, probably ever, would you say? Would we say?
Yeah,
most successful, certainly, in terms of his profile and the stuff that he's won. So he'd be a bit of a Cooper then. But as you've seen for Liverpool's first four games this season, Mohamed Salah's still very, very important to what Liverpool are doing. So, you know, even like £200 million, I think Liverpool would have just said no. And now it's just all a bit of a moot point anyway, because he's not going anywhere, certainly not until next year.
Absolutely. And don't really just touch on it then, Theo, but obviously it's been in the last kind of 2 or 3 weeks that, you know, we've obviously had one bid, and I think there was talk earlier this week that a Saudi delegation flew into London. That's probably the most serious, that more serious than I think anyone expected it to be when it was first mooted about, you know, as I say, 2 or 3 weeks ago. I think everyone, as Dolly said, expected it to just be, you know, registering the interest, laying the foundations for next summer. But how do you kind of view that bid of 150 million last week that was obviously swiftly rejected? Do you think it was a case of them saying, look, we know it's going to be rejected, but we're here next summer? Or do you think they, you know, they had serious plans of getting him in before the deadline tonight?
It's an interesting one, because Al Ittihad are in the Club World Championships this year. Saudi Arabia's hosting it, so that's why they've got their place. Mm. So that was part of the reason why they want him, because they want him to compete for that. Like, that'd be such a huge statement if Al Ittihad got through to, say, the final and facing a Man City, and they could have a real go against that. If you had, what, Benzema, Salah in attack, you have Fabinho, Kante in midfield, got a chance of at least scoring a couple of goals against them, not winning against the Man City's treble winners. But that was part of the reason why they wanted him. Now and next summer, it might be a bit difficult with them if Al Hilal come call him. I think if Al Ittihad really wanted him and thought it was realistically going to happen, they put this bid in a month ago. Like, that's when all the talk started, over a month ago, and it's taken them until the day before the English deadline. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, the only way anything is happening now is if Salah effectively does what Nunes did at for Wolves and Man City and go on strike and force it. And he's not going to do that. He's not going to damage his Liverpool legacy. And you think, well, if Al Ittihad are missing it now, as Doyle says, this seems to be their window, then they're probably resigned to not getting him next year. Like, you have to say, someone else will maybe need to move on. But they've also got all their overseas players rules. Like, Al Ittihad have already got 9 foreign players. One of them is out for the season. Salah's international teammate, Hegazi, who was at West Brom a few years ago. I think he did his ACL. But they've still got 8 players there, and they need to move a couple on to make room for players. Like, there's been speculation that they're looking for a centre-back as well because of Hegazi's injury. Like, they were being linked with Sergio Ramos, which would have been a very interesting yes. link-up. Granted, he's now gone to Seville. But there's been also speculation that Benzema's not happy, that Nuno Santo didn't want him and he was like forced on him. He demanded the captaincy and transfer talks and he didn't wear it for the first couple of games. But then he's won over Benzema, so Benzema's got the armband now. They signed Jota from Celtic and he's not started yet. There was speculation they wanted to get rid of him after a month. So it's not as like going as well as you expect for Al Ittihad's reigning Saudi champions. And this is a warning there maybe for players here. At the same time, it's Mohamed Salah. As Doyle says, he's the most high-profile Arabic player there is. Like, if you can get him, you do everything in your power to get him. That's why I feel like Al Ittihad maybe didn't try as hard as they could if it was really realistic for them. Like, if you put 200 million on the table when Fabinho's going, when Henderson's going, then we talk. Now, when Liverpool can't even replace him now, it's not going to happen. Yeah. And then you look at his perspective as well. When is the right time to move for Mohamed Salah? Like, if it's next year, but you spent this season trying to get Liverpool back in the Champions League. Surely you want to follow that through. You want one last crack at the Champions League. And we've seen the Ballon d'Or nominations last night. He was the only Liverpool player selected. He's not going to win it this year. Messi's probably going to win it. He's not going to win it next year, you'd argue. He'd have to win the Cup of Nations and have a really good go at the Premier League title, because the Europa League's not going to be enough. So it's like, well, what is your legacy in the English game, in the European game? You've spoken before that you want to win the Ballon d'Or. You want to be the second African player to win it after George Weah. Maybe you need to stick around for a little bit longer, but we'll see. Like, for Mohamed Salah, it is a move that would make sense to him and appeal to him to go to the Middle Eastern world, But that's why it's something completely different for us and the European side of things to look at, because we're not in that same viewpoint. Like playing in the Premier League, playing in the Champions League is the place to be. In a few years, well, months, years' time, it could be very different for these players from the Middle Eastern world.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Absolutely. And Dudley, obviously, Salah started the season really well. He's been one of Liverpool's best players. I mean, the front line have started really well. There was some talk from Andy Robertson earlier this week who basically said that, you know, Mo's been Mo. He's kind of got on with it, got his head down, and kind of produced the goods on the field. Next summer, if, you know, there was to be another move from, you know, the Saudi Pro League, whichever team that may be, he'd have 12 months left on his deal. Obviously, whatever, there's talk of whatever price tag he'd demand, but is there not a fair shout here for Liverpool to be going all out to make him sign a new contract? Because, you know, I know Klopp spoke last year about saying, similar to Lewandowski in terms of he's not your average 32-year-old or 31-year-old, whatever he is. You know, he can play in kind of those 36, 37, 38. You know, there's an argument here that Salah probably has 4 or 5, maybe 6 years left at the top game. Is that how you see it as well, or...?
I'm not sure he's got 4 or 5 years, maybe 2 or 3.
But you don't just think because of it, he's, you know, he's adapted his game, isn't he? He's not as reliant as...
Well, then he depends on what team you're playing for. And true. If you're playing for this Liverpool team, we know how they like to play. So there's only so much you can get away with when you get to a certain age. And I'm not saying that Salah's Jordan Henderson and whoever else, but you've seen, you know, even someone like Wijnaldum and players like that, that they've dropped off massively and Liverpool got rid. So they didn't waste any time there. Would like just to update my bus shout from earlier. It's not the 10, it's the 10A that goes everywhere, by the way. Anyone who knows what I'm talking about will be nodding with approval. If you're ever going to see him on a bus in Liverpool or Merseyside, it will be the 10A, trust me. But going back to Salah, it's interesting, actually, when Theo was giving his answer then, I was thinking that, he's probably right there. He said, if you get them into the Champions League, why wouldn't he stick around? But I tell you, he wouldn't want him to stick around. Liverpool, in the sense that then he'd be in his last year of his contract and then he'd leave for nothing at the end. So I'm thinking, tying in with your question that you've just asked, it's possibly they may end up doing this rolling 1 year, 12-month contract where they always stay a year ahead and they come up with some kind of agreement. If that's possibly the only way, because Liverpool won't want to give a player who's 32, 33, loads of, you know, a big long-term contract purely because of his age.
Well, he won't want to take a pay reduction, you'd imagine, given...
He won't take a pay reduction. He'd only want a pay rise, but, you know, given the fact he's obviously got Saudi offering quite a lot of money. So that's the other reason why, if he's going to go, it will be, let's be honest, they're all going for the money, aren't they? No matter what anyone says. I'm sure we'll get on to that in a minute. Why wouldn't you, if you're that way inclined, as it were, you know, there has to be some kind of... In fact, weirdly, Salah's probably the one player out of the whole lot that doesn't need that temptation because of everything else that we've already mentioned about what it would mean. So that's interesting in itself. But yeah, I think Liverpool, if they are going to offer... I mean, personally speaking, I would. I'd do the 12-month thing. At the end of this season, I'd go, right, sit down and say, right, do you want to stay?
Just so Liverpool always have the upper hand kind of thing.
Yeah, and then say, right, how about we do this? We arrange, we'd have a rolling 12-month contract. And then when there's 12 months to go, we can have a look. And if you want to go, we'll sell you kind of thing. That would make a lot of sense for Liverpool. Mm. Whether it would make quite as much sense for Salah, probably not. So then you're left with that tricky situation this time. Well, about 10 months, 9 months possibly time, where you get to the end of the season. He's getting towards the end of his penultimate year. So he's about to enter his final year. And then Saudi Arabia come knocking again, which is exactly what will happen. So then it's possibly going to be more on the player. And then we may... I don't think there's any sense that Klopp will ever want him to go unless he has a massive drop-off, and he's not shown any sign of that because of what you said right at the start of this question, where you look at Lewandowski, you look at players like that. Ronaldo, less so, I think, because he's just kind of a different kind of player, full stop. Although, I think he's one that, you know, Salah and players like that now look to as if that's the example. The very, very top players look at Ronaldo and go, well, not only did he keep himself going, and let's be honest, I think he is getting towards the end now, I think. You can't go on for too long. Same with Messi. But certainly Messi's a different type of player. Messi's unique. You can forget about it. There's no one like him. But Ronaldo, he kind of transformed his game, and You could argue that maybe that's what Salah will end up doing, because he doesn't quite have the pace that he did do. Not that he's slower.
He's dropping a bit deeper already.
Well, exactly, yeah. And, over the past 12 months, he's been setting up a lot more goals while still scoring. What did he get last year? 29, was it? No, it was more than that, wasn't it? It was 30 or 30 on Diego. Yeah. Did he get 29 in the league, or am I just making that up?
I don't know. I think you're making that up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, with Salah, I think he already has been transformed a little bit, but it might take a little bit more if he wants to, you know, carry on going for another 3-4 years, certainly at this level. And of course, again, it goes back to what we were saying before. We don't know what the Saudi league's going to be like in 12 months, let alone 2 years. So we don't know what standard they're going to be at. Although you would imagine the standard this season is going to be slightly better than it was last season, purely on the basis of all the players that they brought in.
And just, it's hypothetical, but just a question I want to put to both of you. Obviously, I know that the transfer market with the Saudi fees is quite volatile at the minute, but what is an offer that you think Liverpool would be happy with, you know, next summer? Say he has a year left and El Etihad or Al Ahly come in at the start of the window. What's an offer that you would probably be happy to see Liverpool accept? Is it 150 million? Is that the kind of the benchmark now? Or
That's a difficult question, because if Saudi Arabia wasn't there, you're probably expecting Salah to go on a free transfer at the end of the contract. Like, if you can sell him for a profit 6 months ago, you're happy. Like, it's what happened with Fabinho, it's what happened with Sadio Mane, and it was this marginal profit, but you think we never thought we were going to get that. We milked the best years out of them, got our money's worth in terms of winning trophies, getting to the Champions League year after year. We're certainly being paid back on the investment, and then it's just, oh, that's a nice little bonus, we'll get an extra 40 million for him. With Salah, you're going to more than double your money quite easily. So it's like, is the market in that state in 12 months time where they can bid comfortably over 100 million? Is he still putting in 30 goals a season and worth that sort of money? He's going to have the Africa Cup of Nations. Like, if Egypt win that and he has the tournament of his life, he's going to reach another level again. Like, he can put these demands on. I mentioned on the podcast last week, there is that premium on his fee anyway. Like, we say English players cost that little bit more over here because they're homegrown. Well, if you're in a Middle Eastern world, you're in Saudi and you want to sign this high-profile Muslim player, that should cost them a little bit more than if you were a PSG, a Bayern Munich, or a Real Madrid trying to sign him.
Paying for his status and his name.
Exactly. And then we've seen Harry Kane just go for 100 million to Bayern Munich when he had a year left on his contract. So for Salah, you're expecting at the very least that. Like, if we were selling now, you'd want a world record fee. You'd want over 200 million and you'd want it in a month ago. So you've got time to replace it, really come to terms with it now. At the moment, for next year, I suppose 120 million as the absolute starter point. But you take as much as you can if you are really going to consider selling him. But then for Liverpool, you've got to look at who can actually replace him. I'd say Saka at Arsenal is maybe the best shout, but can you really get him? You need Arsenal to have a drop-off, not be in the Champions League, and he still seems to be...
Talk of Jared Bowen, is he someone you'd...
Bowen, is he really going to be coming in straight into that class? Like, it's an argument that you can't necessarily replace Mohamed Salah. Mm. You have to change how Liverpool play, and maybe that's where
probably
Darwin Nunes comes in.
Well,
yeah, Darwin Nunes can come in and get the goals. Gakpo can be like the Firmino replacement. Maybe Diaz steps up a bit more. Jota's still getting goals, but you need to spread it around the team. We're certainly seeing with the midfield this year with Szoboszlai. You'd like to think McAllister and Gravenberch can do similar. You've got the likes of Elliot and Doku, who could maybe in a couple of years' time really step up and be numbers in terms of that right winger slot. But you've got to just assess it as we go along over the next 12 months.
And Dolly, same question to you. Fee and any potential replacements in the Premier League or abroad that have maybe caught your eye?
Yeah, well, there's always a replacement. There's no players irreplaceable, whether that is basically just plonking somebody in the same position or changing the team around. Otherwise, you know, once a good player leaves a certain club, then that's it. They just go out of existence. So, as we know, that never happens, does it? I haven't got any names, to be honest. I'm just buying a bit of time trying to think of something.
I like it.
I've not really considered it, to
just
be honest, because
in there and
well, the thing is that Mbappe would be good. Yeah, just get him in for like whatever fee you get for Salah, and then selling for Real Madrid for £300 million, and just go, how do you like it? You know, you could do that. But yeah, in terms of Salah, I think next year £150 million, and if he shows any inclination that he wants to go, just say, you know what, fine.
And if you get that at the start of the window, it leaves Liverpool in a pretty happy position, doesn't it?
Because you get, and of course the thing is, no matter what they get for him, Liverpool will know that when they then go looking for somebody, the other teams will be like, oh, you got loads of money now, so we're going to put a load more value on this particular player. So they're going to have to, whoever the sporting director is then, and it could be me by then, let's be honest. Just note to Liverpool, probably don't do that, given I've just told you that I don't know any players that can replace him. I think £150 million, but as we just said, just in my last answer, it'll be interesting to see how much the Saudis want him then.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And obviously, at the time of recording, less than 12 hours after the window, so I think it's fair to say Mohamed Salah will be staying, touch every kind of wood we can, that Mohamed Salah will be staying at Liverpool at least until January.
It is actually wood, by the way.
No, it's not. It wasn't. But one player who did leave Liverpool for Saudi Arabia earlier this summer was Jordan Henderson, and he has been in the news this week.
He did a chat. With somebody else. That wasn't us. No.
Yes, with The Athletic, David Ornstein, Adam Crafton. a really good chat for anyone who hasn't seen it. But there was a lot of elements that were discussed, obviously the motivations behind his move, how he's adapting to Saudi, and there was also some interesting comments on Jurgen Klopp. Henderson said alarm bells were ringing. He had a chat with Klopp back in the last season, and then when he returned to pre-season, we know he went through this kind of vigorous training routine over the summer and was kind of keen, shall we say.
He did the boxing, didn't he?
And then he came back and said that, you know, his stance hadn't changed, which I'm not sure I entirely believe, given he didn't even complete 2 weeks of pre-season, didn't even play a game. But then in the second part of this interview, he essentially said that Klopp has come out now and said that he's really happy with his team, which would, you know, infer that he's happy with the players that would go. I just wanted to get your take on maybe his comments.
The first thing, Klopp's not going to say, oh, I'm really unhappy with my team and I wish we had Jordan Henderson. That's never going to happen. And Jordan Henderson should know that. So I think we can safely say he's just
playing the game.
Yeah, playing a bit of a game there. In terms of not being wanted, don't forget that it was Jurgen Klopp that insisted that Henderson got a new contract at the age of 31. Was it 32? Yeah, something like that.
4-year contract as well.
Yeah. And kept him as captain, obviously. There was never any suggestion that he was going to have the captaincy taken away from this season, even though it's obvious that he wasn't going to be playing as much. And I wrote at the time that it's not a great look that the Liverpool captain, at the first sign of... Not the first sign. In fact, it would be the first time when he was the captain. The first sign of real pressure on his place, which is to be expected given his age. Mm. And the fact that last season he was among many midfielders at Liverpool who didn't play particularly well for a large part of it. That he's kind of left, basically. I don't like to say that he's shirked the challenge because I don't think that he has. But I think he's... Something with that interview is that it was almost like he was trying to talk himself round all the reasons that he left, apart from addressing the one real reason, which was what we were saying before, is that he was offered an awful lot of money. Yeah. And nobody likes to hear that, but how many people go to jobs because people offer them more money? Yeah. And we know that with Henderson, that there's another situation, which I think Theo's going to touch on in a second. But in terms of the actual Klopp stuff, I think... To say that it's a footballer interview, they're mostly wishy-washy. I hate to break that to everybody listening, but...
No, I mean, as you say, he's almost trying to convince himself.
Yeah, I think can tell when you're reading through it is that he's trying to avoid the actual nub of the actual argument, he's kind of tied himself in knots a little bit. Wasn't his best interview, let's put it that way. And I think it's one that over time he'll look back and go, ugh. And in his brain, it probably sounded a lot better than how it's going to, you know, when it came out on paper or website, sorry, the websites, because, you know, they don't have a newspaper. But just talking on, the situation overall with Klopp, I think to say that he didn't feel wanted at Liverpool, I think that's a bit daft. I think he didn't feel as though he was wanted as much as he used to be, which is a slightly different question, which is probably right, because he was obviously being phased out the team as a regular starter in the same way that James Milner was. And James Milner ended up sticking around for 8 years overall. I think Henderson didn't want to become that kind of player coming on in the last 20 minutes. I think he said that before. Yeah. So that's another reason why he left. And also the financial opportunity to safeguard not only his future, but that of his family, I suspect.
And that was my next question about Milner. I mean, he won the European Cup at 33. And I think he made over 25, 30 league starts.
Yeah.
You know, Liverpool playing in a second-rate UEFA competition. So there was, Henderson's argument that he was going to be playing 10 minutes here and there doesn't really stand up, does it, when you kind of mirror it?
I think he probably meant 10 minutes here and there in the very biggest games is what he was worried about. I think that because he's used to playing at that kind of level. I mean, and from his point of view, it's just interesting that he got named with the England squad, didn't he? And loads of people were kicking off, which I thought was a bit harsh because he hasn't literally, not much has happened since. He's just moved a club. So,
I think it'll be a sort of a phasing out, though.
I think he just wants to get through to the Euros and that's it. And it'd be interesting to see where he actually is this time next year, whether he's still at Saudi. So, but just overall, the Klopp thing, I do think that was a bit... I just think he probably shouldn't have said it the way that he did.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
No, absolutely. And Theo, your kind of thoughts on, as we just touched on then, the same kind of issues and what he said. And I thought it was quite interesting as well, because when he did do his kind of big video send-off, you know, 2 or 3 months ago, whenever it was, there was no mention of Klopp. There was mention of Damien Comoli, Brendan Rodgers, Kenny Dalglish, but there was no Jurgen Klopp, which I thought was quite interesting. Just also say your take on it all.
I think Jordan Henderson is quite an insecure person. I don't mean that as an attack on him, but have any of us read his book? He's quite open about that himself, yeah, in that book, like how he's always questioning. He needs that reassurance, and maybe the reassurance wasn't there this time from Jurgen Klopp in the same way it had been in the past when he was going to sign his new contract a couple of years ago. I think I've seen a suggestion today that his first day for pre-season was the same day Szoboszlai joined up, so maybe he did want to fight for his place. But then Szoboszlai, he was like winning everything, wasn't he, in those first training sessions. He won the lactate test, and you realise how good a player Liverpool have just signed to essentially take your place. Maybe that reality has scared him a little bit, and he's a little insecure about that and what it means for him.
That's quite a lot of hypothesis.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. But it's a similar sort of route to when his new manager left Liverpool, in terms of Steven Gerrard didn't start at the Bernabeu in that game against Real Madrid that Doyle always loves writing about every year. And that's when he decided, yes, I need to go and leave. I need to play elsewhere. This isn't me being that supporting role. And maybe Henderson's thought similar. I was at one of the England qualifiers over the summer, and he was actually really good then. And you think, well, he's still got a couple of years left in him here. Maybe the preseason has done him the world of good in terms of he can get back to that level. And it was just part of an overall failing in this Liverpool side. But he's obviously felt that he does need to move on. He isn't happy taking this challenge on and not starting every week. If he'd been open about leaving and it was something that had been on the table at the end of last season, I'm sure there'd been interest from Premier League teams or clubs across Europe. He wouldn't have necessarily had to go to Saudi Arabia, because let's be honest, he's never heard of that club before a couple of months ago. It's just because Steven Gerrard's gone there and then they're dangling all the money in front of him, which you can't really have a go at him for taking, because in any of our situations, if someone's offering you that much money to go and try something new, you probably would. Obviously, there's all the political sides to it as well that have been questioned, that have come up in this interview that we've covered time and time again, that everyone is going to have an opinion on. We don't really want to dive into it too much again, because there is no right answer here. There is no agreement here. But let's just say he didn't cover himself in the best light when he was answering to those questions, because he's trying to keep everyone happy. Mm-hmm. And in the process, he's basically upset everyone, quite a lot of people. But yeah, it's a difficult one. Henderson, I can understand why he felt he needed to move on, but the way he's handled it was wrong. I don't agree with the choice to go to Saudi Arabia, but then he is the only player who's being attacked for making that move, quite rightly for some reasons. But we're not having the same conversations about a Sadio Mane, a Fabinho, a Roberto Firmino. We're not going to be having the same conversations about Salah if he went. We're not having those conversations about Fowler or Gerrard for going and being a manager over there. It's just Henderson has been held to this higher level because of the position he's put himself in, and that's now what's making him face this further scrutiny. But it's a really fragile position for him too, because say Steven Gerrard gets sacked in 4 months' time, what does he do then? Does he see out the contract, or does he think, this isn't what I signed up for, and he wants to move on? There's a lot of things up in the air, and I suppose Henderson, he's got to just think of himself in the present moment, take that money whilst you can, play at the level whilst you can. Like, he's still in a league where he's going to be playing against Neymar, Cristiano Ronaldo, Koulibaly, and some really good players, and defensively and offensively there, where he can really test himself. It's just not Premier League, it's not the Champions League. We'll see what it means for him in the long term. But yeah, he's going to have face up to this at some point. That was his first interview. I'm sure it won't be the last time he's asked these difficult questions and we'll have to address it. Nevertheless, when he's coming back for Liverpool Legends games, which I'm sure we'll see at some point.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Well, certainly it doesn't feel like Liverpool have missed Jordan Henderson if the first four games of the season are to go off doily. A draw at Stamford Bridge and 3 wins. Kind of your initial assessment then, during the first international break?
Well, that draw at Stamford Bridge looks terrible now, doesn't it? For what Chelsea have done since then. No, I'm only joking. I think that was always going to be a difficult game, no matter what. Who went there? Yeah, first game of the season, you know, new manager, all that kind of thing. And the fact Liverpool were bedding in a new team, and you kind of saw that in that performance. You saw it for a little bit against Bournemouth as well, certainly the first 20 minutes. And you saw it in the first 20 minutes against Newcastle, weirdly, until the sending off. And then suddenly things kind of changed for Liverpool. And against Aston Villa on Sunday, I mean, Klopp said afterwards, you know, it's been a long time since Liverpool have played that well. And even I was like, I'm not impressed by anything, let's be honest. Even I was like, well, that was quite good. You know, they were quite good. A bit disappointed in Villa, as I mentioned on the podcast on Monday. But I think Liverpool kind of took advantage of that. And at the start, if you'd have said 10 points from 12 games from that start, I think everybody would have just said, yes, definitely. Mm. You know, it doesn't matter with the draw is, given there's two difficult away games, one tricky home one, and then you've got the slight unknown of Bournemouth because new manager, quite a few new players, you don't know how they're going to be. In the same way that for all those other teams, they weren't quite sure how Liverpool are going to be. I think with Villa, obviously, they got a couple of players that are out injured quite long term.
They played in Europe, didn't they?
And they played in Europe, although it was a bit of a dead rubber because they were already winning 5-0. Yeah. And also, they had got an injury during the game. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it was any kind of coincidence that Szoboszlai scored the first goal. I think that was kind of... The fact that Szoboszlai scores the first goal and Nunes has a hand in the next two, it kind of suggests that that's kind of... Certainly for Nunes, we've spoken about him loads on the podcast. We did it on Monday as well, where you can see kind of it's clicking for him now and he looks confident. And I think it'll be very, very soon where there just won't be any questions asked about him. It'll just be, oh, he's just a Liverpool player. Sometimes he'll play, sometimes he won't. Sometimes he'll miss some chances. He'll score quite a lot. He'll be involved. And I think people will stop going, well, is he going to be a success or not? Because they'll accept him for who he is. And I think Liverpool have long done that, but weirdly, I think Nunes has also accepted himself for what he is in the Liverpool team as well. So that's good. Szoboszlai's come straight in, as I say, he's made such a massive impact. I know there's some people are trying to liken him to Steven Gerrard. Was that you, Benny? Was it you? No.
Steven,
which is the thing, a bit premature. I think he's a different kind of player, but you can see why.
Yeah.
Because of his willingness to go and get stuck in. And when the going gets tough, he certainly does get going, as he's proven with the two games where Liverpool were down to 10 men. McAllister, he's not really been able to play in his proper position yet, has he? Although I thought he did a lot better in the number six role against Aston Villa, which was interesting, really, because Villa are that team who... They've made a habit of just running straight through Liverpool's midfield in the past. And they've not been able to do it for 90 minutes. But when they've done it properly, like the 7-2 game, you know, and for the first half of this game back in May.
Yeah.
They tend to cause Liverpool problems. And I think Liverpool's midfield played quite well with that. Curtis Jones contributed to that. And again, it was another interesting shout that the minute he's fully fit, he's back straight into the starting lineup. The player who started all the games, they were unbeaten at the end of last season, surprisingly. So maybe he's found his position. And then we haven't mentioned Bacetic, who's been, you know, he's got years ahead of him. Yeah. We haven't mentioned Endo, who obviously might take him a bit of time to adapt. You saw what happened with Fabinho. I haven't mentioned Thiago, who's not played because he's been injured. And we did a piece, I think it was it this morning or
this
yesterday?
Morning, yeah,
this morning, where we were discussing the best starting midfield for Liverpool. And I think Culver was put Thiago in there.
Yeah.
I didn't see that. Yeah, and Harvey Elliott, of course. And Harvey Elliott he's been a tremendous substitute to bring on. He's probably a bit annoyed that he's not been getting more minutes. But every time he's come on, he's just made a massive difference with his energy. So he can't be far off having to start. So from a position in the team that had looked terrible, but looked like it was a bit of a trouble for Liverpool. Some people have said they haven't had an overhaul. I mean, I don't know what they expect, but they got rid of five midfielders and brought in four new ones, and all of them. Well, I only mentioned Gravenberch.
Gravenberch as well.
So there's him as well. Suddenly, there's like loads of players they can choose from. And I know you work on the assumption that two or three of them are going to be injured. It still leaves you with five. Mm. And five
and a few off the bench as well.
Yeah, exactly. And five. And Bobby Clark, a youngster who I think is going to be really good for Liverpool in the long term. So, in terms of the start, results couldn't have got any better. The fact that the transfer window couldn't have early signs is they've done pretty well in terms of the players they brought in. We could argue till the cows come on about whether or not they should have got another centre-back, which I think they should have done. But even then, Joe Gomez looks like he's kind of grasped the initiative. And I wrote a piece yesterday talking about when he did that slip in the first half. In the past, it would have been, you saw against Napoli last year, you saw against West Ham when he conceded the penalty. When he makes a mistake, it kind of sometimes can get to him. Yeah. And while that was an accidental, he slipped. He just got on with it. And I think that's what he just needs to do. And I think he can get that, to bring that to his game. And the fact he was playing on the left side of the centre-back as well, which was interesting. Could he be somebody who Liverpool... I mean, he's been there for longer than any other player,
only
hasn't he?
Only seven player, isn't he?
So. Only one there since Klopp started. So he's got an opportunity now. And his ability to play on that left side will be able to give Van Dijk chances of a rest, because he's another player who's getting a lot nearer towards the end than the beginning. So overall, I don't think Liverpool complain at all by the start. It's probably better than even Klopp would have expected. And I think they've already shown signs that if you've got John McGinn saying, after the game, saying, oh, they're going to be a real force this season, and he's somebody who knows, he's been in the Premier League quite a lot, some of the other teams are looking and go, this could be interesting.
Absolutely. And Theo, as I say, it's been a really good start. You know, plenty of impressive signs from the new signings, and it feels like now, you know, when Liverpool do return from international duty, or the players, should I say, you know, there's a real chance to build momentum now. The Europa League starts. You know, they've got a trip to Wolves and then to Austria, and then I think West Ham and Tottenham shortly after. So, you know, real time now for Liverpool to build on that kind of early promise and show that they can, you know, put themselves up against Man City and Arsenal United, whoever will be up there this year, and, you know, maybe put in a... Is it too late to say that they'll challenge for the title this year, or...?
Too late, too early.
Well, too early, perhaps. I mean, everyone had kind of written them off in pre-season and said, you know, everyone be happy with a top four finish, just get back in the Champions League. But, you know, would you be twisting that? I know you weren't of the impression that they'll be up there, were you?
I think we have to wait and see how it goes along. Like, at the moment, you're competing to be the best of the rest. I think we can all agree Man City are probably going to win the title. They've already won every game. They've got that lead, and it's rare for them to slip up enough for other teams to take advantage of that. But if there is a slip up, Liverpool are in a position at the moment after four games where they'll be there to take advantage of it. Like, they can almost accidentally end up in a title race ahead of schedule. Like Jurgen Klopp said himself in, I think it was last week's press conference, he doesn't really know what to expect from his team this year. He's excited for what's to come, but this is just day one. It's that first step to what can come. Like, obviously, they're going to get a hell of a lot better. They've got a very young midfield. The strike force is clicking, and you can rotate that as much as you like, and it's still as good as ever. Maybe a couple of holes in defence, but we're seeing more confidence from likes of Gomez. Matip isn't as shaky either, and we've got likes of Conor Bradley coming through. They're in a stronger position now than they were last year. Like, the start has been better than expected.
I feel like that's what killed Liverpool last year, a slow start. And
yeah,
then
a slow start.
Kind of lost interest and lost focus.
But the start has been better than expected, and it is only going to get better. Like, when you have a midfield that you can say, this is our starting midfield, this is what we want to do. Like, at the moment, you wouldn't know what is Liverpool's go-to team. You wouldn't know what their go-to formation is, really, like where exactly that inverted fullback fits into it. I'd argue maybe the number six position isn't as strong as you'd like it, but that is being a bit harsh on Endo because we don't have a clue what to expect from him in terms of when he's adapted to Premier League football yet or how much percentage he's going to play when he's back in this side. But the fact that all these are positives going, well, they will get better. Gravenberch will have had a month or a couple of weeks to settle in. He's not gone away on international duty. He's had that time training at the AXA. Then he's in with his new teammates. He's going to gel in. You've got McAllister and Szoboszlai have hit the ground running. Endo's going to settle more. And Van Dijk looks better when he's back from suspension. He'll be hungry to go again. Robertson in the last few weeks, I think we can agree, he's been one of the better players. He's certainly found his position a bit more in this new formation. There are so many positives there. And if Liverpool can just keep picking the points up, take points off the bigger sides, like if they can go and get that result against Tottenham at the end of the month, then they're breathing right down City's necks, aren't they? You're going, yep, they are the main title challengers. Hopefully there's no going to be slip-offs around the corner, and then it's something that can just go back to normality for a couple of years ago. Like, they are a strong team, but because it's that first step, we don't know what to expect. But if this is the start of it, you can be third in the table, unbeaten, then it's certainly positive for what's to come. And then they are going to be that time side that can just be competing with City time and time again, year after year. Got a hell of a gap to make up from against the treble winners last year, but so far the signs are good.
No, absolutely. But that is all we've got time for today. We'll be back next week to preview next weekend's trip to Wolves and all that follows that. So be make sure to follow everything on the Liverpool Echo website and the Blood Red YouTube channel. But that's all from myself, Keith McDonald, Ian Doyle and Theo Squires.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.